How is my mic, by the way?
It's fine.
You're like, I can't hear you at all, so it's perfect. Hello, and welcome back to your one and only source. We are your hosts.
My name is Phoebe.
And my name is Caroline. And, well, we're finally meeting again on a Tuesday. Hello, everybody. Have you missed us?
Guys, Caroline and I have been on the phone for however long, 45 seconds, and she still hasn't wished me a happy...
What?
Why don't we have work today?
Oh, I don't wish anybody a happy day that has that word in it.
For me?
For you? You want me to wish you a happy President's Day?
As a president, yeah.
President of what?
The student body? The class? 4 years in a row?
Sorry, it was so not important to me that I completely forgot. Well, you haven't wished me a happy President's Day.
What were you president of?
Currently, president of the Caroline Show. What? That's crazy. What do you mean, what were you the president of? I luckily don't have to say in the past tense. You, on the other hand... We'll find you some place to reign, okay? But it sure as hell isn't here on this podcast. Just kidding. Just kidding. Phoebe is in charge of me. I know it might not seem like that to anyone else. I know that you know what they say. Don't judge a book by its cover. Phoebe's in charge of me. And she scares the living daylights out of me, too. Every time they're like, have you ever seen the movie Horrible Bosses? I'm like, don't need to. Actually, don't need to know exactly what it's like. Have you met my sister? Anyway. Wow. So here we are. I know we're not recording this actually on Tuesday, but like the thought of the Tell Me Lies finale being out into the world as people listen to this.
Oh my God, am I going to stay up for that tonight?
I am. I do every week.
I didn't last week, but I might tonight.
I mean, here's what I do need to say from like a social media marketing perspective, a little tip for the Tell Me Lies team. I get what you were trying to do with Groundhog Day. They posted something saying like 6 more weeks of Steven, 6 more weeks of whatever. But that's not the truth.
It's not true, apparently.
So we were all horrified to find out the finale is this week. And I just feel like
that was everyone.
A big mistake. I know what you were trying to do, and I respect it. But if you're going to do that, you better back it up with 6 more weeks of Tell Me Lies.
I'm really tired of the 8-episode seasons of any show.
Me too. It's not enough. 10 no. Minimum.
Absolute minimum. 15 I happy know. Medium, but realistically, I want 25.
Of course. The only thing... is that if it's like truly a limited series, we're getting one season, I will accept 8. Mm-hmm. But like, no less.
Because then your brain is already like ready for it to be finite. I've already realized it,
like, exactly. Like, I'm coming up at the end of this.
Just a long movie at that point.
Precisely. I get to just release it.
Do you think they'll do a season 4?
I didn't, but I'm wondering.
Now they're kind of acting like they might.
I know. Well, they should. They know what's good for them.
That's what I'm saying. And Megan Oppenheimer said something where she was like, in Hey Girl, I'll believe it when I freaking see it, that you think that this ending is going to satiate us and we're going to be like, everything's tied up.
Am I going to see Steven dead in a ditch? Because if not, I don't think I'll be that satiated.
Then she was like, I think it was a good ending. We could end here, but there are other avenues. Like, there are other things that we could explore. And I'm like, well, yeah.
Like Brigley?
You're going to show us that. And also, is this episode just an hour like everything else?
It better be 3. This episode better be 3 hours long.
Minimum.
Like, minimum. That's all I'm saying. I really, like, and it's nice because we've gotten a lot of people who I think have started watching Tell Me Lies because we can't shut up about it. But then a lot of people that were also probably already watching it but loving it. So you're enjoying this. And so Tell Me Lies content for us is probably over after next week. But, like, hopefully not.
We'll still be talking about it.
It's such a good show. It is such a good show. It really is. And, like... I don't know. Did it take you a second to get into it? Am I wrong about that?
No, you said that last week, too. I just think there was another show that started around the time Tell Me Lies started. They were both on Hulu. And one was about adults. And
there was like Lie to Me that had me confused.
I think I thought it was that show, and I wasn't interested in that.
Agree. No, but
and so once you told me to, I think I had written it off, but once I started watching it, I was locked hooked. In.
Chloe told me to watch it. She was like, I actually can't believe you're not watching it. And then I told Phoebe and Amber to watch it. And let me tell you, the Situation Room group chat is alive and well. I mean, actually, if you want to know what's going on in any corner of the world.
Hey, that's one of my pinned conversations on my phone.
It's so informative. Like, if I'm busy for a little bit.
It started with Big Brother. And we were like, yes. This will probably go dormant in the off season.
Of course not. And it's like, well, somebody's off season is somebody else's on season. And mm-hmm. So we keep it active and we are up to date on, I mean, one of us is scouring every corner of the internet at all times. So like that group chat is just ripe with information. Rife?
Rife.
What's the word?
I think it's rife.
Anyway. Who cares? Do you have any guesses for what's going to happen in the finale?
No, because I still feel like there's like the school year's not even over.
there's so much that needs to happen.
What do you mean this is going to be? And also, we haven't gone to 2015 in weeks.
I need to know like how exactly we get to this wedding. And I just, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think an hour is enough to tell that story, to connect those lines.
No, I think we need four more seasons, at least.
Four more seasons. You heard it here first. Your one and only source, four more seasons of Tell Me Lies.
In Phoebe news, I finished Breaking Bad, and I watched El Camino.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I texted you about it yesterday.
Well, you told me that you had a gripe about it, but I don't think, did you tell me you watched it?
Yeah, I was actively watching it when I texted you that.
Oh, you just said, like, it's stupid that it took so long.
I do feel that way. Everybody looked completely different. And I'm like, if you were going to do a sequel 7 years after it, you couldn't then put us back.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesse Plemons was so young when he did that role.
I know.
So, like, the 7 years, he just looks so much older.
Yeah. What did
Aaron Paul was more viable because Jesse had aged so much by the end of the show. And, like, was weathered and worn down.
Yeah.
But
what did you think of the, not of El Camino, because I never watched it, but about the finale, like about the ending of Breaking Bad?
I thought it seemed perfect. To me, it seemed like that's exactly what they thought was going to happen when they started the show. And that's always, to me, that's a good indicator of a good finale.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like Walter didn't have an evil twin that was doing this the whole time and had a British accent.
And hello, sister. We didn't hello, have Walter. To. Hello, brother. Hello, brother. I am the danger. We didn't have to hear that or anything, which was good. He dies, right? Walter White dies, and then Jesse rides off in the sunset in the car.
Well, like, you think he's riding off into the sunset, and then that's where El Camino starts.
Ugh. I think that's why I didn't watch it. I'm like, I want to believe
he becomes
that vision of him at the wheel, like, I got out. I want that to be it.
Becomes the they put everything that happens in the family on Walter. But Jesse is still, like, a wanted man.
Ugh, guys, let him go, okay? Look, I'm fine with him out on the streets. I don't know about you, but I'm fine with it.
He was fine before, for the most part.
Like, what? Okay, he was kind of hurting himself vibes, like, which we don't love. But, like, I think the damage Walter did was far more. And Walter 100%. Didn't have a heart of gold.
No.
Which, what is the biggest twist in that show?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, again, and I'll say it again, don't judge a book by its cover is the lesson of Breaking Bad.
And tell your chemistry teachers that.
And
I'm on to you,
Mrs. Banana.
As a student, start saying, hey, I'm going to watch you do inventory from now on.
Yeah. And hey, I didn't see the lab hour sign up for just watching you close down. Could I? Where's that sign up sheet? You need someone. We need a security guard in there watching.
But I didn't the show thinking that Skylar was the ultimate villain of anybody's story. I didn't like her. But I don't think she's like, I would probably be miserable too if I was.
Well, that's what's so crazy about it is like, again, and I think we said this, like Skylar should be so easy to root for.
Uh-huh. And she's just not.
And like, but
also, I think part of it with Skylar is the wishy-washiness. Like, there are times where she was willing to reap some of the benefits, but then she just got so in her head about, like, we can't be driving nice cars. And then that's the ultimate question of everything is, like, what is money worth if you can't actually do anything with it?
So like if you can't about that all the time. I'm like, if you have to hide it in your walls and you can't spend it or use it, then like, why do you want it?
Exactly.
Power fee.
Well, that's what it becomes for. And he was able to rationalize it the entire time by saying, even if we can't use it now, they will get to use it when I die.
Yes. Which is still true, right? Well, probably not.
Well, yeah, because at the end, and guys, I'll put in the show notes spoilers for Breaking Bad, but in the last episode, he goes up to the people that he had that business with. That's one storyline I think they could have fleshed out a little bit more or given it. Because like, in the beginning, it seems like it's going to be like a B plot line. Like you're going to keep seeing what that endeavor was and what it did to Walter. And then we never really get an answer about like what happened between the three of them.
Yeah.
That got him teaching it. I would be pissed if I'm Walter. If I'm Walter and I have to go to this motherfucker's birthday party in this mansion, and I'm having to like even contemplate making meth to pay for my cancer treatment.
If that's even on the table,
I'm lighting the place on fire when I walk in there.
I know, like, the crime I'm committing just isn't cooking meth. Like that's just what it is. At that point, if the thought crosses my mind, suddenly another crime has crossed my mind as well. You know what I mean? In response to.
And so in the end, he ends up going up to them. And I actually liked this moment where we got to see Badger and the other guy again, the other Jesse's two friends. Walter like sneaks into their house, and then he says on Walter Jr.'s birthday, who I think he was a really good actor.
So good. You know, I got to meet him. He came to CFC.
I do remember that, I think.
And he just did like a talk, and Chloe and I.
He has the best performance in the show. Next to Jesse, like they made me feel the most, I feel like. But
I love when he calls Skylar a bitch.
I know. And that's another part where it's like, I should just only feel bad for Skylar because like he's calling you a bitch because of the stuff you know Walter's doing.
Exactly.
But Skylar, she's such a bitch.
Don't be such a bitch, baby. Skylar, don't be a bitch challenge. That's the thing is, but that is part of, it feels so misogynistic, like to be like, I'm hating this woman for like wanting to raise a normal family. But like,
it's like equal opportunity hatred.
Exactly.
Actually, the only woman in that show I like is Marie.
Oh, I love Marie and her purple fucking house. She's so fucking funny. And how they never mention the purple, but
and how they never mention, they never go back to the fact that she's a klepto.
I'm like, let her go, girl. Like you,
when Skylar goes back,
just be careful at Target because apparently they got a threshold. You go for it.
And she goes to return that tiara when Skylar goes to return
the
it.
Tiara.
And the person's like, we're gonna call the police because this is stolen. And she's like, no, I got it as a literal gift. And then when she confronts Marie about it, Marie says, okay, but why were you returning it?
Like, you were turning the tiara I got you.
That's so crazy.
She's so funny. Wait, you hated Hank? I like really was sad when he died.
I think I became sad, but I think he just bothered the fuck out of me. I thought he was so annoying.
Well, he was going after your guy.
But I don't like Walter.
What, and how about what's his name? Old man.
Mike.
Oh.
Now, in his relationship with Jesse, and also. Oh. I liked the parallels, like the way that they showed Mark's relationship with his granddaughter. And then the way that we see throughout the show, it's a pattern of how Jesse treats kids.
Yes.
And that's the difference between Walter and Jesse.
That's how he's a fucking chemistry teacher. He works with kids every day and he fucking
hates them.
Jesse
is lost. Like that's why he's gotten here. Walter's gotten here in a different
way. He got here because of people like Mr. White, you know, who put him in this box of like, you're never going to amount to anything.
Like even the scene where it's just happened, or I think maybe we see it in, I think maybe this was in El Camino. I can't remember because I finished it yesterday and then I watched the movie right after. I think we might get a flashback in El Camino to a breakfast that Walter and Jesse were having where Walter, they're talking about Jesse's future and how like Jesse could go to college. And at first Jesse is like excited to hear that someone believes in him. And Walter's like, what would you go to school for? And Jesse says, maybe like sports medicine. And then Walter says, oh, that is awesome. Or
Walter
like,
goes, you fucking idiot.
Walter said, well, I think that like you could really excel and thrive in a business and marketing major. And Jesse latches onto that idea, like gets so excited. And then Walter says, so, like, all we'd have to do is, like, get your GED, which is easy, and, like, all these things. And Jesse's like, why would I have to get my GED? And he's like, well, and Jesse goes, I graduated high school. You were on the stage when they handed me my diploma. And it's this moment where at first Jesse forgets the way that Walter and the way that everybody used to look at him. And he sees the thing that I think he's always going back to with Walter is a father figure who doesn't make him feel. Yeah. There are times where he doesn't make him feel so bad about his life choices.
And it's like he brings that vulnerability out of Jesse to allow himself to think that, like, this is someone who believes in him. And so then when Walt is like, crashes down on him or whatever, it's like,
it makes it so much worse. He expects it from his dad.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, oh my God. It was a great show.
It's such a good show. And now I'm gonna finish our Breaking Bad combo with this tweet I think I sent you, but it's so funny. It says, sometimes when I'm feeling stressed out, I make a list of actionable steps and imagine Mike Ehrmantraut saying, this is what you're going to do. And then all these people responded. They were like, wait, this actually is going to really work for me. Like, this is what you're going to do. You're going to do that. And it's like, yeah, and, no, he can solve everything for me.
There's a scene in El Camino where it's a conversation that Mike and Jesse had that we never saw, where Jesse's like, what am I going to go do? Like, where would you go if you were me? And it's not a real advice conversation in the way of like Mike going in and fixing it. It's like a real heart to heart between them. And you can tell that Jesse really values his opinion. And he says, I would probably go to Alaska. And that's where Jesse ends up. But then in El Camino, he hands the vacuum guy, you know, the guy who helps you, hands him this letter. Yes. And we don't get to read it or see who it goes to.
Mm.
So, like, maybe it's for the audience interpretation.
I bet it's his little brother.
It could be his little brother. It could be Brock, the little boy, because they fucking kill her, which I thought was crazy. And then it could also, I also thought there's a world where it's Walter Jr. or
I thought that
Skyler
too.
Or maybe Hank's wife, like, just because he stayed at that house. There's so many people, but I'm like, I kind of want to know. I want to know what he said.
But also kind of cool that they don't tell you, because it's like, honestly, like, if we saw Walt, like, let's say Walt lived and he wrote a letter, we'd be like, it's probably going to a business partner. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? And it's like, it says so much about Jesse as a character that we have so many ideas of, like, who he could be writing the letter to, you know? It's such a good show. Oh my God. Well, next, I have your next one. It's Homeland.
Maybe.
And you will love it. You will be addicted to it. Chloe took her so long to just take my advice and start watching it. She cannot quit. She
can't. Is it political?
Stop. Yeah.
Okay, well, that could sell me.
I know. It's, well, I'll give you the general premise. And everyone's watching it right now, so it's,
they're
great.
Hunting terrorists, right?
Well, okay, so it's a post 9/11 world. And Carrie Matheson is an FBI agent, and she's very erratic, and she's, like, kind of all over the place.
Claire Danes is the only kind of character she can play.
And then she's got, like, her counterpart, which is Saul, who is Mandy Patinkin, and he sort of, like, keeps her, you know, level a little bit. But they're, like, they get shit done, and basically there are all these prisoners of war released back to the United States, and they thought that these people were all dead, and we find out whatever. So Sergeant Brody comes home, and she starts to think that he's turned, that he is actually working for the bad guys, and everyone's like, you're crazy, you're crazy, you're crazy. And
but she's not crazy,
but she might not be so crazy. It's such a good show. And okay, I don't wanna,
so she's Spencer Hastings grown up.
No, literally, Phoebe, she's Spencer Hastings. She is Spencer. Oh, my God. Now I have to rewatch it with that lens. Oh, my God. Okay, well, I just,
guys, that's how you know my brain is absolutely
and Spencer
rotten.
Hastings is the main character. There you go. You'll be locked in. It's so good. And, like, it's one of those shows where you just, like, never
guys,
know what's going to happen.
Guys, can we give Troy and Belisario a chance on a show like that? Not just, like, a cop show that's on Amazon Prime?
Come on. Like, can we give her a fighting chance, please?
Just watch
God?
The show, and you'll see why we say that.
You'll get it. Just don't watch the last, like, couple episodes.
Or, like, maybe just the last one.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Soon as she's doing a British accent, just turn it off.
Get the hell out of Dodge. I want to switch gears, talk about Traitors for a second.
Okay, I haven't watched this week.
What?
I know.
Okay, well, I'm spoiling it.
I know Dorinda gets murdered.
Okay, I'm spoiling it.
What?
Well, actually, there's not that much I could spoil because you know Dorinda gets murdered.
And I know who the new traitor is.
And you know who the new... So I really... We don't find out who they decide to kill.
Wait, they banish.
We do find out who gets banished.
Just don't tell me that.
But you're not going to care, but okay. It's like a nothing burger. You could probably guess. Guess.
The survivor girl?
You might not even guess because it's such a nothing burger.
Mark?
No.
Or the guy from One Tree Hill.
Steven, yes.
Okay.
So I'm sorry. I know that's like, but
why weren't we giving him the Dylan Efron edit and we wanted to give it to fucking Colton?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think he was really fighting hard enough.
Do want to talk about after we can talk about the show.
The reunion.
Well, we've heard about the reunion so far.
Yes, for sure. So, and guys, we are going to get into some Gossip Girl stuff, but it's a good time for you to get your little pop culture fix from us. Okay, so I've been giving a lot of thought to Traitors at this moment, and a couple things I think. The first thing I think is that Rob is playing, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but he is playing the most selfish game I've ever seen anybody play on Traitors. Which, again...
He's playing a good game, unfortunately.
I'm not saying it's a bad game. I'm not saying... Yeah. It just isn't the show for me.
And it's not fun to watch.
Yeah, like, I'm just like... And no matter what, Rob, they're never going to let you be the last man standing. So, like, you have to have someone else with you. Like, you know, if they don't find you out. So, I get that he just, like, wants to play to win. But I'm like, he wants to be the only traitor in the turret.
My issue with him is he says that he in all his confessionals, and then he's such a fucking asshole to Candace, who's treating it like a game. And he's like,
yes,
Candace, I have a feeling you're like taking this really personally. Really? And like, no,
he gives me like war flashbacks to guys I dated that are like deeply manipulative. Like, I'm sorry. And like,
it's like, yeah, this is a game, but it's also like the point is to have fun. Like,
right,
you guys need to be fun to watch, and what Candace is doing is fun for you. It's guys weird to argue me. Fun.
And it's weird to me that Rob, like, it's weird to me that his response to this is like, oh, it's a game, like you're taking it. And it's like, I don't know. Anyway, okay. So I think he's playing a really selfish game. Again, it's not necessarily a bad game. It's more the type of game I would want to see on Big Brother or something where it is sort of like every man for himself. But here's the deal. Rob thinks he wants to be the only one in the turret. But if we look back at the times he's been in the turret, it's been Lisa Rinna and Candace running the show. They're sort of putting all the things into motion, and he's saying like, yeah, whatever you think, and then sitting back and at the round table sort of doing his work. So I'm like, he's going to be directionless when he gets into the turret and it's just him and Eric, like, and he doesn't know what to do. I don't think he actually has the game playing skills to make the moves he needs to make for longevity in the turret. And if I were him, I think he chose Eric, and he is more than willing to let Eric go. Like, he is more than willing to let Eric blame.
I think he picked Eric because he's safe. Rob is, in his brain, he's safe in one of two ways.
Yeah.
Either they trust Eric so much that he's not a liability. Like, he's not going to out Rob. And also, it's no hard feelings if you leave. Like, for Rob, he's like, I don't really care if you
right, exactly,
fuck this up. Honestly, if Eric gets out and he says he's a traitor, that's a better thing for Rob.
It's better for Rob, exactly. And so something that happened in this last game is Tara and Johnny, they let everybody know. Oh, I love them. They basically are like, look, we haven't let you guys know this. Like, we are best friends. And like, I am like, telling you.
Me watching the show, I'm like,
no, who didn't know?
You haven't?
Who didn't know? I know. They're like, we are best friends, like, in a way that, like, it's
a
different kind of.
You and Clyde on Big Brother, you're like, no. You guys have been scheming the entire time. You sit everybody down in the house. Okay, guys, actually not been telling you this.
And everyone's like, okay, you sat us down for this. Where's the news? You're both on the block, by the way. And then they're like, wait, why are you two being so mean to each other? You're both on the block and your speeches, you're tearing the other person down trying to save yourself. This is, I thought you were best friends. I'm like, and that's why we're doing this. And that's, and you know what? We agreed on this before you walked in this house.
There's a world in which.
Can't be us both.
Actually, there's not a world, but I like to picture for a second that there's a world where for some reason you guys get into the Big Brother house and it turns into a Johnny and Tara situation where you guys do just kind of like have fun.
You guys well, kind of that would like, be what
like
it is.
You guys are on the block and you guys are like not really interested. You guys are still just talking to each other.
Julie Chen Moonbuzz is like, please, please, we are, this is a live show. Can you stop? We're like, hang on, we're working out a bit. Give us a sec. No, I was thinking like the late nights when everyone goes to, I'm going to be like, all right, I have to have my one-on-one as head of household. Clyde, can I see you first? And he comes in and he, and then the camera's on us and the live feeds are, have never had more viewers in their life. He and I are doing dances. We are doing sketches. We are like having so much fun. Anyway, back to Traitors. So Kristen, she, the top chef. Yes, she is like on to Eric, okay? She says at the end of the episode, she says to Eric, Eric, you have not been speaking up at the round table and it's making me question you. And she says this in front of a room full of people. And then she goes and talks to Rob and she's like, Rob, like, I really think Eric is a traitor. Like, blah,
and he's
going to
throw him under the bus?
He is going to throw this man under the bus. So he's like, okay, okay, okay. So, but Rob is definitely going to think if he's smart, and I don't know, but if he's smart, he's going to tell Eric, hey, she is really on to you. We got to get her out of this house. Now, if I'm Rob, I know that the second we kill her, everybody's looking at Eric because in a room full of people, she just came for him. Eric is not strategic that way. He is like a nice guy. He is like a faithful who just caught himself in a situation. So I think he's going to be like, okay, yeah, like I believe whatever you think. And then Rob's going to do the work the next day of, I'm just saying, like, Kristen came to me last night and she said that she thinks it was Eric. And everyone voted about, and then Eric's going to get out of the round table and Rob is going to betray him at the round table 100%. That is what I would do if I were Rob. And my goal was to play the selfish game. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing, though, is that so there are four names. We don't know who's getting killed, but there are four names shortlisted for murder. And it's Tara, Johnny, Natalie, and Kristen, I think. That was it. And I'm just like, the logic for me behind killing Tara or Johnny is zero. They were just at this round table and they made this huge case for Steven. And they were like, I'm telling you guys, like, we are faithfuls. And they said to each other, they're like, well, how do you guys like know? Like, just because you told each other, like you would just believe, like they were like, I have really close friend. Mark goes, if I had someone from Dancing with the Stars on here, I trust them, but I wouldn't just blindly trust them. Tara and Johnny go, I blindly trust him with my entire life. I know that.
Is Caroline and Clyde.
No, I blindly trust him with my entire life.
If you guys are on the show and you're faithfuls, I mean, if the producers were smart, one of you would be a traitor, the other would be a faithful.
Exactly. And then we could recruit halfway through. Exactly. But like that, they're like, I blindly trust. Yeah, nope, that's not a thing for us. Like it's, and I'm also like, Mark, it's different. Like they grew up in like Olympic training. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as Dancing with the Stars. Like
that is hysterical. I'm sorry. Comparing Olympic level figure skating to,
I was like waiting for them to be like, Dancing so with the Stars.
It's a little different.
How do I say this in a nice way? It's
they
a
both
little
pull
bit
out their medals.
Yeah, they're like, so where's your mirror ball? But yeah, so they're like, no, I blame you, whatever. So then they get the table to go against Steven. Steven's voted out. Obviously, he's a faithful.
Oh, now, so that's why it would be stupid for them to be an option.
Yes. Yeah, so why the fuck are they wanna, even yes. on the table? You need to let, and Natalie
so
too.
Now, this is the first season I've ever been rooting for the faithfuls.
Really?
Well
I guess, I don't know who I'm rooting for, honestly.
As soon as Candace got out, I was like, okay, fuck you, Rob, I'm done. I think they're, and listen, this is me being biased as a Bravo girl, but I do think there should be rules about how quickly we can get the housewives off and in what succession.
And it can't be one after the other. You know, exactly. Hello. Where's the entertainment value?
And it just, like, it just, and it does feel like there is a target on their back.
Yes.
And I think it's like mean. I think it's actually mean.
It is. It's sexist and they're big personalities. And so they're thinking like it's easy to think that they could be that because like, well, from an iconic standpoint, of course, Lisa Rinna should be a traitor. You know what I mean? Like anyway. But so if I'm Rob, here's who I think needs to be killed. And this wasn't an option. But if it has to be Kristen, and that's going to get Eric out. Otherwise, we need to be taking out Maura We need to be taking out Mark. We need to be taking out these non-issues. The people who no one has looked at a single time.
I know if Rob's really playing a selfish game, he will get Maura out because that takes heat off of him.
Exactly.
Because I think they'd be like, well, Rob would never kill Maura. They're best friends.
Yes. Those are the people they need to kill so that at the round table, you live another night. That gives you longevity because they're going to go for Tara. Then they're going to go for Johnny. Then they're going to go for Natalie. And if you play your cards right, they could go for all of those people before you. So that's why you need to kill the people who are so not issues at all, not Tara or Johnny. And then you need to let them just do their thing at the round table and make themselves look guilty. And then that's how you live longer. Like, hello?
If you were on the show and you were a traitor, here's what you would struggle with the most.
What?
Being at the round table, you're about to get out, and you enter the circle of truth. I think Alan Cumming would have to, I was like
not sure what she was going to do.
He might have to get a gun out of his pocket and say, Caroline,
he's back.
You
there.
Have to say it.
I'm like, I have to tell you guys what I am. Okay.
You just make a break for it. You're going to feel really stupid.
Who wants to know? Wait, okay. Actually, I know we just did a vote, but now vote if you think I'm a traitor. Okay. Oh, what about a faith? No one for the faith? You guys are going to feel so stupid when I say it. But I'm not ready yet.
Then you run. Caroline.
I got to go. then I fake faint. And they're like, this is a circle of truth. You can't pretend to have a medical emergency. That literally goes against everything the circle of truth stands for, Caroline.
Do you remember that girl on The Bachelor who kept fainting?
No.
I feel like it was, what was this?
Fake. Was it Rachel Sennett? Again, you couldn't waterboard that out of me.
What season was Corinne on? And that crazy psychologist. I think it was next season.
Can't Stand the Vile Files.
Was a great season of television.
That's the season that got me into, that was the first season of The Bachelor I watched the whole thing.
That crazy bitch. Who was a psychologist. I remember mom being like, that girl has a degree in some kind of mental health.
It was like Taylor versus Corinne. And it was like, hey, Taylor, this should be so easy for you. The fact that it isn't, I don't know. Let's do some reflection, you know? Okay, one more thing I need to say about the traitors before we move on. So when that's what I would do.
Too.
Oh, yeah. Reunion also. I do want to say why I would pay any amount of money to get an extended round table. Like, just instead of like
Peacock
the
exclusive.
Podcast or the exactly. Can we please get a Peacock exclusive extended round table?
Does it air on NBC?
I don't know.
Okay, but here's what they need to do what Bravo does. And they air it on NBC. It's
and then
at
have
8
the
PM.
Uncensored, uncut exactly. version on Peacock. And literally, I don't care if it's 6 hours. Like, give me the
I don't
cutting
care
room
if it's $600.
Footage. And I don't care how much I'll take out a loan, babe. Like, let me see it. And actually,
loans can wait.
I want to rent out a theater for it. I think they should actually have it be like, okay, if you watch The Traitors, prove it. And we have the top 100 Traitors fans, which obviously we'd both be in, get to come to the Staples Center, and we're putting it up, and you're all going to watch.
Only 100 people.
All of the, only 100 people. And you're going to watch all of the footage from the whole season from the roundtables. No one's protected. Anyway, okay, let's go get into the reunion. So obviously the reunion hasn't happened or we haven't watched it yet, but we've got a little bit of news about it, a little bit of intel. And somebody had the nerve to retweet Lisa Rinna's video that she made. And she said, you wanted a housewife? I'll give you a housewife. And yeah, I came for Colton at the table. Whatever. She made a video talking about how she comes for him.
She goes, guys, it's been handled. And she goes, I don't know if they're going to show it, but it was done.
If they don't show it,
sorry, you guys are fucking sexist. We're going to protect this white gay man because he's gay
because he gets bullied online
because he put a tracking device on his ex.
Let's be clear about why the world doesn't like Colton.
It's not because he's gay.
It has literally nothing to do with it.
Well,
in fact, I would say that was one of the best things he ever did for himself was coming out.
First of all, it's because you're deeply unlikable.
deeply unlikable. You have terrible fashion sense, by the way. I still remember what he was wearing in his Bachelorette like intro video. Do you remember this?
No.
I remember because Kelly fell in love with him during his Bachelor intro video and went and followed him on Instagram within seconds. And I think messaged him and was like, hey, if it doesn't work out, like, I'm in.
Oh, so, Kelly, I'm in. And guys, I actually just checked the timestamp of that message. It was this year.
Don't even put that out there. Don't do that to my girl. But he was wearing a purple sleeveless hoodie.
Okay, I can picture it now.
Yeah.
And he was a gay man's idea of a straight man.
Yeah, and he says that he loves fashion. He's like says it in his thing, and that's what he's wearing. And I'm just like, this has got to be a joke. This has got to be a freaking goof. And so now seeing him, and mom was like, if anyone knows anyone who's ever going to go in the Traders, just tell them to look at everything Colton wore and don't wear any of that. She hated Colton so much.
She hated him then too, I feel like. I don't think she liked him on the show either.
She was like, a virgin, give me a break. She's like, oh, you're a virgin. Well, get off the show. Ever heard of the fantasy suites? Come
Mom's
on.
Mom's here for the raw dog sex.
Yeah, mom's like, no condoms this season, by the way. I just want to see what happens. Just kidding. Mom would never do that, and they should never do that. Anyway, so apparently Lisa Rinna brings it up and says, you said you were going to hold me hostage, and now I know that's something you're capable of, or like whatever she says to him. But she brings up the holding her hostage comment. And then he walks off the reunion set and had to be like begged to come back under the agreement that they don't bring up the stalking allegations again.
Colton, huh? If you can't answer to it. And hey, by the way, if Andy Cohen's in that editing room, we will see it.
We will see it.
If this was a housewife reunion.
Dude, you know show and watch what happens, and you think Andy's going to protect you one single bit? You're crazy.
And I'm also just like, Colton, why would you put yourself in this position if that's off limits?
Yeah.
If you don't want to talk about what you did, you shouldn't be a celebrity anymore.
You shouldn't have done it. How about that?
Well, that for sure.
Don't do things that you're not going to want to answer for or talk about later, okay?
And then if that does happen to happen, don't sign on to a Netflix documentary about your journey
and then try to get back as into part the of good your journey.
Graces of our of the world when you did that to this poor girl.
And it's like also if it's also just like, oh, there's so many layers to like how horrible it is. But I'm like, okay, let's say he's like, I still want to have a career in the public eye, but I did this thing that I have to answer for. Well, then how do you right your wrongs? Mm-hmm. We need to know that you. What have you done to for Cassie so that she can heal from this? And where are you donating your money? Where are you volunteering? Where are you like, you know, mentoring young men who struggle with things like this? Like, I want to see what you're doing to right your wrongs, because there are things you could do to be like, look, I made these horrible mistakes. I'm not hiding.
And you
from
don't
them.
Have to.
Yeah, I'm not hiding from them, and let me help. How do I give back? Because now I have this platform.
And it's also, you know, like, it's great.
Maybe I don't deserve it, but if you're going to give me a second chance, then I am going to make it worth it. You will not regret it. Like,
I think it's just troublesome, and it bothers me that he wants to be such a spokesperson for the gay community. You don't get to be a spokesperson for the community when you actually do. Your history.
Oh, great. On April 14th, he came out publicly. Great.
Add
it to the list of all the fucked up things on my birthday.
He shouldn't get to... He puts himself into this position to be an advocate and a spokesperson for the gay community.
Yeah.
But he doesn't... You're a bad example. And it's a terrible precedent and something that people can point to now and say, yes. Really bad people can do this. They can point to that and say, well, gay people, like, that's what they do.
It's literally, that's what I agree.
And I'm not comparing what Kevin Spacey did to what Colton did. They're both terrible in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
But they both leveraged the queer community.
Yes.
To try to
rehabilitate
take the blame off of themselves.
Yes.
To try to say, I know what I did was wrong, but here's why I did it.
I was gay.
It's
gay,
not a reason to do
so
it.
Hard. You know how many people in this world are gay and struggle so much with coming to terms with that, coming out, the reception, living their truth, like all of these things,
and grow up in the same kind of communities you do, horrible things, Colton.
And they don't make mistakes like that. Like, and by being someone with a platform who makes these kind of mistakes and then slaps the Band-Aid on that,
mistake.
Like, oh, well, you know, no, I mean, no, you're right. It's not, it was a crime. It's like, you have now given ammunition to people who want it, you know?
And by not answering for it and not owning up to it, you're making the conversation that much worse.
Yes,
and I
exactly.
just, it's really disappointing that, frankly, he even got to be on the Traitors.
I agree.
And then I also think on top of it all, and it tracks with the way that he treats women, clearly, but I think he's take everything that he did to Cassie off the table. Mm-hmm. The way that he treats women, the way that he speaks to women, the way that he... I mean, the way that he like...
Infuriating.
Objectified is the wrong word. You might have a better word for what I'm saying, but, like, he saw Lisa as, like, a circus monkey.
Yes.
Like, I expected you to act this exact way, and because you're not...
Right. No,
you
exactly.
have a target on your back.
And it's like, but, okay, well, Colton, we could all say the same thing for you. Like, and in fact, isn't that, like, a huge pain point in the queer community is, like, the stereotypes that are often thrust on them and how people expect them to be and act and, you know, whatever. And it's like, Colton, do you want...
But because she's a woman, it's okay. You
but
can
but
do that,
okay,
Lisa.
Because, yeah, like, I don't know. I just think... I would love to get more queer representation on these shows, but not from people who are like that. Like,
well, I feel like they do a really good job of it. Like,
they do.
With the drag queens and so many people.
I just
want to
be
include,
clear. Like,
it's like,
I don't want to be misconstrued in any sort of way about.
I don't think people can misconstrue what we're saying.
I don't think
here.
So either. But, and you know, I have fucking love Paige DeSorbo going off about Colton on Giggly. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Y'all, we made it through January. But that does mean that the month of February is now here, and it is full of flowers and candy and, of course, lots of talk about relationships and dating. And it doesn't really matter whether you're single, dating, married, just focusing on yourself. It's really impossible to get away from the constant reminders that everyone else's love life is perfect. But the truth is, most of us are still figuring it out. We're still finding our way, and no matter where you are in your romantic journey, therapy can really help you find your way. It can help you figure out what you really want. And it can also help you figure out what's getting in the way of your happiness and your love life, yes, but also in all areas of your life. It's like Mama Ru always says, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love someone else? Anyway, we just want to remind you here at your one and only source that everyone is still figuring it out, okay? And we want to encourage you to take some pressure off of yourself, especially this month, the love month. I know you're probably hearing me say this and you're thinking, yeah, but Caroline's in a fairy tale marriage. What could she know about my struggles? And to that I say, girl, how do you think I got here? But in all seriousness, it takes work to be in a strong relationship. Anthony and I really both believe in using therapy to strengthen how we show up for each other. And yeah, sometimes just to vent about how one of us always forgets to make the bed. Both are okay. We are partnering with BetterHelp because they offer quality therapists that work according to a strict code of conduct, and they're all fully licensed in the U.S., and they offer a therapist match commitment, which I love. So if you aren't happy with your match, you can just switch to a different therapist at any time with BetterHelp's tailored recs. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the largest online therapy platform, and y'all, it works. So sign up today and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Squad.
Good.
You know, Paige, she's really, I'm loving her on Giggly Squad. And Hannah is going to be her downfall. Like, I'm scared of it. But anyway, neither here nor there. Well, should we talk about Wuthering Heights for a second? Just
yes.
quickly, guys. Okay, sue me.
I'm so
I
nervous to talk about it. I actually just got butterflies.
I freaking loved it.
I've been reading
see
nothing,
it again.
Nothing but hate tweets on Twitter.
I know, but I have been seeing some really positive ones as well.
Me too, but the ones that are hateful, like, just like make me feel like I have worms for brains.
Yeah, but you know what? At the end of the day, like, I think the people who the criticism that the well, it's not like the book. That criticism for me, as someone who's not read the book, is this: expand your brain a little bit. Like, she, first of all, Emerald Fennell did not say that this was the book. It is in quotes. The title Wuthering Heights is literally in quotes. Like, she said, point blank, this is literally, she goes, when I went back and reread the book as an adult, I said, whoa, I didn't remember any of this. She was like, I read it as a teen girl, and this retelling that I'm doing here, first of all, is taking one part of the story, because I did an intense, I'm probably going to read the book, but I did an intense, like, chapter by chapter.
Guys, this is how pretentious I am. Mimi and I at dinner after, we got hibachi after, which was absolutely a legendary decision.
Of course.
And we sat at a table, actually, quick tangent, with the rudest kids in America. Oh my God, Caroline. Mimi and I both walked out of there and we were like, if we had acted like that. And Caroline, this is actually going to make you so upset. This is going to make you like nervous, right, as a kid. One of them was a friend of the family.
No,
not a kid.
Acting
and he
bad.
Was the rudest one. To ordering his food. He's sitting back with his bendy straw and is like playing with it in his mouth.
I already hate him.
And the person, the waiter, asks him what he wants. And he goes, won't take it out of his mouth. Fried rice. It's loud. We're in a hibachi restaurant. The guy was
screaming. There's fire.
The guy was like, what? What? He was like, fried rice. And he was like, and what? Okay. He heard him that time and was like, what kind of meat? Like chicken. Do you want chicken, shrimp, like the normal flavors of or meats for fried rice? And yeah, he says steak, which wasn't an option. So then they like give him something else. And he's like, kind of, and the mom, I can tell, doesn't want to like parent him.
Yeah.
But is like, can you speak the fuck up? But then the little girl starts having tantrums, like whining, crying.
Would have looked over and said, he can't hear you. Speak up.
Mimi and I were close, I think.
Because I think if you are sitting at a hibachi table with strangers, your family. And like, if you're with a friend group, like, you're in the friend group.
We couldn't get fun people. We had to sit next to this miserable ass family. They all ordered water.
Would you rather sit next to those people?
I was the only
people?
Person at a table who ordered a Diet Coke.
Okay, I hate that reality. Would you rather sit next to those people or me and the blonde bombshells when we go to hibachi and we all have different storylines walking in and Addie and Clyde start talking in loud Southern accents, fighting with each other about how they're probably going to get divorced, but they're staying really good friends and they still like to go to hibachi every Friday. Which one?
I think it's clear. But anyway, so we went in there and Mimi was like, I need to buy the book. I want to read it. And I was like,
you bought it?
No, I was like, I think I might have it on my bookshelf. I think I might just have a copy lying around.
I do have
and
a copy
I do
lying around.
I came home and yes, I do have a copy of it.
It's untouched and it's
well,
in
it's
pristine
used. It's been
condition.
Read. It's been read at least once
by someone else. Yes. Not by you
guys. I only buy used books, so it looks like I've read them.
I love that about you. I love that about you.
That's not true.
I do have a copy of Wuthering Heights. I'm probably going to read it, but I just finished.
It's much shorter than I thought. I think in my brain, it was like a massive book.
It depends on the edition that you're reading. Some of
mine's
them
like a little pocket
big.
One, and the font's not too small.
Wait, what was I just saying?
We were talking about, you just finished.
Oh, I just finished a book that I really liked. My first Colleen Hoover. Mm-hmm. I read Woman Down because it is about an author who has a movie adaptation made of her book and it ends up going really bad. And she like goes into hiding and is too scared to write again.
When did she write that?
After what happened. Yeah. So that's why I read it.
I was like, whoa, that's a crazy coincidence.
No, I know. That's why I read it.
We find out that this is all press for the next movie that Justin yes. and Blake are in together.
She has like a 3-page prologue where she's like, and any similarities are completely accidental. I am not writing this about my life. It's obviously written about, but it's, I actually loved it. And yesterday I had like a bunch of stuff I wanted to do last night and I sat my ass down and read the entire book because I just was like, I just want to finish this book. It's so good.
Whoa.
So I would recommend it. It's called Woman Down.
Still reading The People We Meet on Vacation.
And I'm starting my final Emily Henry book. They just opened a new romance bookshop in Lawrenceville. And so Kelly and Kaylin and I went on Valentine's Day.
Did you find out what book Kelly went to her car to finish?
Oh, no. I need to ask.
Guys, that is the most Aria shit I've ever heard. Wait, actually, this is so Aria. Wait, put yourself there. you are taking your good personal friend Arya Montgomery to go see the Emerald Fennel adaptation of Wuthering Heights.
She gets up and leaves, never comes back.
Gets up and leaves to go sit in her car and finish her
book. Look, I'm almost because Paradise just, Lost.
Because she just couldn't wait to see how it ended.
Literally, Kelly gets up and leaves, and like, she and I have an understanding, like, we show up when we show up to the movie. It doesn't really matter at what point in the movie we show up, we sit down, we enjoy. We're not gonna be rushing ourselves, we're not gonna sacrifice comfort. Number two, if one of us gets up in the middle of the movie, we're not like, you missed stuff. Like, okay, who cares? Go to the bathroom. If you need to sit there for 20 minutes, I literally don't care. I'm enjoying the movie. And then you come back, and I've gone through my head now, and I'm like, what does she absolutely need to know that she might have missed? Like, if there was a death or something, and I'll be like, hey, just so you know, this happened. And she'll do the same for me. But if we're gone for a concerningly long amount of time, we will send a text and be like, hey, like, are you okay? So I was like, okay, I'm not going to send text. Like, maybe she's just in the bathroom. Like, I don't want to, like, be like, hey, you're taking a really long time. Like, whatever. But then it had been, like, I mean, she missed, like, from when Kathy officially marries Edgar and, like, the whole montage of all the, like gorgeous life. Outfits, and which I was like, this is such a fun part. She missed all of that. She missed, like, a ton of stuff. So then it's been, like, probably, like, a half an hour. And I was like, I want, and I like look over and I was like, did she leave? Like, did, like, but I see that her blanket's there. So I'm like, okay, she didn't leave. So I was like, where is she? So I text her. I was like, are you okay? And then she like came back shortly after and I hadn't looked at the response from her. And then like, I'm getting in the car to drive home and I look and she goes, yeah, sorry. She's like, had to finish the last chapter of my book. I just like needed to know how it finished.
Thinking of Kelly sitting next to you for the entire first half of the movie, being like, I gotta get out of here. I just need to know how this book ends.
She's like, I think I'm gonna die in this house.
Imagine she pulls out the book from her purse
as with a reading light. Well, she pulls out her Kindle. She does have a Kindle. Anyway, no, I was like, wait, that's so cute. But also then she didn't really like the movie. So I was like, well, maybe if you hadn't like if you could have immersed yourself in the world, maybe you would have felt differently. And yes, I did have like a little bit of a vested interest in the movie. Like I wanted it to be good, but I really liked it. And here, what I was trying to say is like this, first of all, the actual book, Kathy dies, I think, a lot earlier in it. And, like, then it follows Heathcliff's life. Mm-hmm. This movie is just about Heathcliff and Kathy. It's really not about anything else. And Emerald Fennel was like, it's like me as a teenager reading it. That's what I remember. That's what I latched onto. And, like, I wasn't thinking in my mind as a teenager reading it, the period appropriateness of everything. Like, this is, like, the world that I dreamt up, this girlish, whatever, tragic love story. And she's, like, and it's not, whatever, but the things that I think she changed, like, one, and I'll talk about this one, like, one criticism I'm seeing a lot is the character of Isabel. Is it Isabel or Isabella?
Isabella.
I, first of all, loved her. I thought she was
so fun. When she gives her the doll, but then also later when she finds the dolls again, I'm like, this is Sharp Objects X housemaid.
Oh my God, I loved it. And also, I loved when Margot Robbie was nasty. I was talking
to my friend Maddie about that. I think that she needs to play a villain.
I loved a real villain. And that's the other thing. Like, Heathcliff and Kathy are both terribly unlikable. Like, and that's okay. They're not supposed to be, like, again, they're, it is, it is not meant to be like, these are the good guys, we should be rooting for them, like, at all. But one thing she changed about Isabella is, like, in the book, and trigger warning, like, there's a lot of rape. There's also a lot of incest in the book. There's a lot of, like, torture and abuse and all these things. And one thing that I, you know, as someone who didn't read the book, appreciated is that now she's in a world where she has agency. And, like, they took out the, like, she gives her consent to Heathcliff. He asks her 3 times, I'm telling you what this is going to be. Do you want me to stop? Do you want me to stop? And it's like, yeah, in my girlish fantasy, there is consent for things like this. And why are we so mad that they didn't torture this fucking girl in the way that they did in the book, that you wanted her to be like, you wanted her to have no agency and be completely abused and taken advantage of and have no sense of like a choice that was made.
Yeah.
You know, not that, obviously, I don't, I would never want to be in her situation, and I don't like approve of it.
I mean, I understand where people are coming from in terms of, and this story means it clearly means a lot to a lot of people. And I think they were expecting, I don't know why they were expecting, I think that's a little bit on them, but I think they wanted those themes to be explored in a thoughtful way.
Which is what Emily Bronte probably did. In Woman Down, Colleen Hoover said something I thought was really interesting. She was like,
that's going to get clipped.
No, but she says, we give so much more grace to our characters than we do to people in real life. And I was thinking about that. And I'm like, that is so true. Like, think about the stories that we read about people. First of all, whether or not you wrote the character, think about characters you read that do these horrific things that you end up forgiving because of whatever. It's different than in the movies. And like, I don't know. It would be great to see those themes explored, but that's just not what this movie was.
I also want to say, I think that we need, especially, and I hate having to call it other women, but I think women who feel super smart and intellectual, we need to have like a conversation about how they discuss work done by women. I'm not saying you need to like everything that women make, but the way that I've seen people talk about this movie and the way that people have started to talk about Hamnet, like these critiques, I don't see this for One Battle After Another.
No.
I don't see this for any of the other male movies. I see it for these two. Because you think it's cringe at the end of the movie when Jessie Buckley taps her heart as she's finally giving herself permission to say goodbye to her kid that just died. And you don't like Jessie Buckley's smirk? That's probably part of why she got cast in that movie.
Literally. Like, her expressiveness, I know.
I'm not saying we need to, because I know that the way that people will flip that is like, well, we are allowed to criticize women's work the same way we criticize. It's like, we are, for sure. But I think that the way you talk about it, and the way you talk about people who enjoy it, calling these people, specifically women who watch it, pea-brained, people who are stupid. It's like, well, maybe you also need to expand your worldview.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about it, just as I've thought about it more, and I really enjoyed it too. I had a blast, which I think we should be allowed to do when we go to the movies. It's just have fun.
Exactly. This movie was fun.
How do you feel about, I've seen a lot of people say Emerald Fennell wanted the IP so badly that she wasn't willing to do something like a 10 Things I Hate About You or an Easy A, where you take the story and it's inspired by it, and you do the same thing, but it's not that. It's 10 Things I Hate About You is not called The Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah.
And if Emerald Fennell was going to say, it's my interpretation of it, and this is not the book, should she have reconsidered calling it Wuthering Heights at all?
Okay, my response. Well, and I. Clarifying question, are you referencing it all, like the modernization, like putting these stories in modern times?
I think that's part of why she probably opted to so call it Wuthering Heights, but is there a world where she could have still done it exactly how she did and called it something else and renamed these characters?
No. Well, okay, and rename the characters maybe. I think she could have called it Kathy and Heathcliff, or she could have called it Heathcliff. She could have called it Heathcliff and kept the movie exactly the same.
And just been called inspired by.
A Wuthering Heights story or something like that.
Yes.
Because if she named it Heathcliff, people would be like, but what? It's about a girl too. She names him. in this version of the movie, I don't know about the book, she names him that. It is her like family name in the book. And also, she said the line, you know, whatever our souls are made of, his and mine are the same. I am Heathcliff. Heathcliff is me, right. Whatever. So, like, I think that would have been a solution.
I think she wanted, but I also, and I don't know the actual legalities of it, but I wonder if, because what I will say about Emerald Fennell's movie making abilities, if there's an area she's weakest in, it's writing. She has an incredible vision. Yeah.
It was a lot of sex. It was a lot of just,
and I just think dialogue sometimes and ideas aren't super fully fleshed out.
Like, okay, yeah.
About Saltburn, it's like the commentary's there. But it's also, like, clear you just wanted to make an extravagant movie, which is great.
Which I Can I say, I love an extravagant movie. And like, when you asked that question, I thought that you were speaking more to like, should we have put it in like a modern time? First of all, I don't think we could have. But second of all,
I agree.
I think that, I love that it's like a period piece, but it's a period piece that's not entirely like the production design of the show, the costumes. Like, I know people have, but I also like, there was thought behind every decision that was made here. And like, it does contribute to an overarching goal. It just might not have been what everyone else's goal would have been for the movie. And honestly, if she would have named it Heathcliff, Wuthering Heights, the book is kind of Heathcliff. Like it is about his story more so, because it continues on once Kathy dies. And so I still like, I think putting it in quotes was fine, because at the end of the day, one of the things people remember most about Wuthering Heights, the book, is the love story, the tragic love story. And that's also the name of the place, whatever, the name of where they live. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think she could have changed the name, but
Do you think it would have changed the outrage had people had that been?
I think they would have been outraged that it was named after a man if they had named it Heathcliff.
And
because he's an abusive,
I think the outrage about Jacob Elordi still would have.
Yeah, that still would have existed 100%.
Which, that's criticism. I'm totally open.
Totally valid.
That makes sense to me. And I do think one of my issues with Emerald Fennell with this also was that she cast, and I haven't read the book, so I know that there's also contention on what Heathcliff's race is, regardless of, you know, people read it and interpret it differently based on what interpretation you read. But I think it was an interesting choice to cast him as a white man and then cast Nellie and Edgar as people of color. When they are kind of the villains in the movie.
Okay, I completely disagree about Edgar. I don't think he's a villain at all.
I think to Kathy he is.
I don't know. I don't think so. I literally think that, like,
well, just for
Edgar
a second,
is the protagonist of the movie.
Regardless of that, my point stands about Nellie. I think that was a weird, I think it's, and again, I think it proves that I don't think Emerald Fennell was quite as thoughtful about those decisions. I think she cast who she liked best for the roles, which I think is an area of improvement for her. But she should have been, cast, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, I think she cast Margot and Jacob because she said, let me get the most beautiful people, the most devastating people I can have in these roles.
In the names.
Exactly. Like, I think that, exactly. She said, they will bring my devastating love story to life the way that I want it to be brought to life and the way that I saw it in my head, you know? And it's like, at the end of the day, too, if you guys have different interpretations of Wuthering Heights that you wanted to see, then you should go make a movie. Like, because that.
But do you think there's room? I mean, I think when she says stuff like that, I'm just a little bit like, but now you're an adult. Now you're a grown person making the work.
But also there's a quote in Wuthering Heights that's, I wish I was still a girl. I can't remember the exact words. It's like, I wish I was still a girl. I'm going to find it. But that's a quote from the book. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I kind of liked the escapism of that, of it being. But now, let's be clear. I'm 100% on board with, and I haven't read the book, so once I read the book, maybe I will feel differently. But with Heathcliff being a person of color or ambiguous race in the book, I do think that 100% area for improvement, 100% just kind of like more discretion. The types of characters that you're circumventing casting with, you know, whatever. I do think Edgar was not a bad guy. I think he was the good guy.
I just think that she.
But you're right about Nellie. I mean, Nellie is the villain of this story. And yeah, she is one of the few people of color in the show. So like that is something where that could have been. But also, I think there's an important conversation around like, it's also an incredible opportunity and role. And if a person of color was the best person for it, like, should we not put them in the role that villainizes them because of that? You know what I mean?
That's an interesting point.
Now, yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a really deep, multifaceted conversation.
If the cast had been a little bit more diverse or even like, I don't know. Yes. There had just been a little bit of something else. If the conversation around Heathcliff's race hadn't been happening, yeah. I don't think I would have even 100%. Noticed that she chose Nellie to be a person of color.
100%. And like, and Nellie is like a devastating character. And the reason I think Edgar is not a bad guy is like, literally, he saved Kathy. Mm-hmm. He continued to love her, understanding she was having an affair. He, you know, rightfully so, was like, you can't see Heathcliff anymore.
I agree.
And then he didn't make Nellie find a new position until she killed his wife.
I know what you mean. I think I was coming from it as from a place of, I think if you are a teenager reading it and you're Kathy and Heathcliff feel like this incredible love story. We want to root for them,
yes. Edward felt like that watching the movie. Like, it felt like you want Edgar to be the bad guy because we're rooting for Kathy and Heathcliff.
Chains of Love is playing. Yes. Like, you're seeing that Kathy does feel trapped in that marriage.
Yes.
And to make him, like, I think it was an interesting decision.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think everybody did an incredible job acting in the movie.
Oh, I thought so, too. I found the quote, by the way. This quote from Wuthering Heights. I wish I were a girl again, half savage and hardy and free and laughing at injuries, not maddening under them. Why am I so changed? Why does my blood rush into a hell of tumult at a few words? But I like that.
She didn't say that, obviously, outright in the book, but she included that scene in the beginning, which I don't believe is in the book. I think I read that. I don't think that we see that. That's not context that's given in the book. The like hanging,
yeah.
Oh, and so yeah. Seeing, but that scene of her in the way that she feels in that speaks to that quote
exactly. And it's very much a movie about loss of innocence, a sexual awakening. Like, I mean, that's really, and that's what this retelling is. And like, I would definitely go see a version of this movie that is book accurate, where. Mm-hmm. It is about,
and I think there have been some that have made topics. One of which people love, where Heathcliff is played by Ralph Fiennes.
Yes, yeah, but I just think that, like, in my opinion, Emerald Fennell said, "This is what I'm going to do," and then that's she did it. And then people are like, "Why'd you do that?" And it's like, "Well, she kind of like you knew what what she said she was going to do. She killed it. Like, she did exactly that. You know what
and
I mean?
Like." And so I know was just this like, is what they're saying. They think the pea-brained people are the ones that are.
That's what I'm saying.
Keeping it in theaters. But at the end of the day, I mean, those are the movies that are selling.
And also, like, art, we should just be celebrating the fact that these stories are continuing to live on, you know? And
that they're getting
art
to
reinvents
be,
itself. That's part of getting all it. Of,
they're getting all of this money. Like, they, like, to be able to make something of that extravagance.
Oh my God.
Kind of a win.
I mean,
right now,
guys, just so you guys know also, as in terms of the production design, Susie Davies is the production designer, and essentially unless they were on the moors, basically every single shot in this movie is filmed in a soundstage. None of it is on set or none of it is on location. So all of these weather scenes we're seeing, all of the backdrop, like that's a backdrop.
Which I think
they're
is part
on
of what made it so
soundstage.
Beautiful. The way that the rain looked, because it was done in a soundstage, looked so much more beautiful. And like
they did
ethereal.
In certain rooms, they found these little like beads of clear whatever that they put to make the walls look like they were sweating when Kathy got sick. Like all of these details. That for me, like looking at the production design alone, I knew immediately that this is not supposed to be like a realistic retelling of a story. This is a dreamland version of this story.
She kind of has like an Alice in Wonderland vibe.
She's a room that looks like her skin. And they actually took photos of Margot Robbie's arms and blew them up and stretched them over. And it is her skin.
I think it's called that in the book, the skin room.
The skin room.
I think it's still called that.
I'm just like, the windows all open. Like all these things, like, they're not accurate. But also, this is a dramatization. This is like a fantastical retelling of a specific storyline within Wuthering Heights. And so I think the quotations do their job along with the press tour and like the way that they have, I mean, also, like, we knew we were walking into a movie with the production that we'd seen the pictures of the costumes and the production design. And then we also knew that Charlie XCX scored it. So why mm-hmm. were you expecting, like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, I kind of knew what that I was going to walk into something.
By the way, it was beautiful.
I loved it.
The music was so fun and great. And like, it wasn't too
I would
overt.
Be getting into it and then I'd hear, like, auto-tune. I'm like, okay, have you ever heard of suspending your disbelief? These are just not true art consumers. Sorry.
You have to be
able to
have
fun. This is an artistic piece. And there are plenty of pieces that in time were meant to just be art pieces.
Sorry, Caroline.
That are not appreciated in the moment that we study years later.
And Caroline, I just have to say this does go back to the universal truth, which is English majors are insufferable.
Are unbearable. I know. And that's because I'm a rare breed. I'm an English major who never read Wuthering Heights, and like, good for me.
This speaks to something about English majors and people who really throw themselves into the academics of art mm-hmm. is sometimes they can forget to enjoy it.
Yes. Well, I'm also just like, okay, you suspended your disbelief when you read the book. Why can't you now do it for the movie? And also I'm so sick of hearing people see, like, it happened with Housemaid as well. I'm so sick of seeing people see films and be like, well, it just wasn't enough like the book. Oh my God. Are you not already expecting this? Like, we didn't have the entire Harry Potter series go to theaters. Like, come
well,
on.
Did you see what Amanda Seyfried said?
When she said it's better than the book and the author agrees.
And when she said, I had an absolute blast making it, and they better put me in the second one.
Yes. And I'm like, yes, and I'm like, and yes, and say
okay,
it louder.
So she listens to the podcast.
Okay. She listens to the podcast. I knew she did. I know that we wanted to wrap up at this time, but I
Paul Feig, I need Amanda Seyfried to be playing crazy Mrs. Winchester.
I need Nina to just take over. Millie, get out of here. Nina, it's your job now. You know, that's all I'm saying. Do you have like 10 more minutes?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to talk about this article that came out rating the most toxic TV boyfriends. Because I do have some thoughts, and it might not take the whole 10 minutes, but we did say we were going to talk about this, and so we must. And I sent you the article. I think you saw it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is from Harper's Bazaar. The 15 most toxic TV boyfriends ranked. I had some notes, but I do want to say that Chuck Bass is at the very bottom. He is number 15.
I think that's a perfect place.
I think it's a perfect spot for him, especially given the company he's among. Like, I haven't seen all of these shows, but as we get higher up, some things I want to note. Okay, we're just going to go to number one now, which is, drumroll please, Stephen DeMarco. Which, of course, although when I saw that Joe Goldberg was number two.
When you sent me the article, I was like,
huh. I mean, listen, if Joe Goldberg wasn't on the list at all, I would be like, yes, yeah, even DeMarco's number one. But because we have a literal serial killer on this list, I mean, not to say Stephen DeMarco doesn't have it in him, but I just feel like
maybe part of it is that the torment that Joe is doing to people as a boyfriend initially, he's not that
okay.
bad.
Yeah, if we're putting it in the...
He's just a bad person.
He does kill his partners and trap them in boxes.
Yes, but he's a good boyfriend before that.
We're not going to take this away from him.
And then when they realize he's crazy, that's when he kills them. But what I will say is he still is number two on the list.
He wants to be good.
What I'm saying is this is really just we are picking at hairs here because it is truly we're splitting hairs.
This is how much we have to be like getting into it to say that he should be above Stephen DeMarco. That's how bad Stephen DeMarco is.
Exactly. He would have to be actively torturing.
Yes.
His girl, like Stephen, there's no like it's instant gratification with Stephen's torture.
And Joe, the long game. He does
it's
both.
It's delayed. Exactly.
You know,
but with Joe, it's like he puts you out of your misery.
Yes. Well, Steven also is like, I'm going to torture you so much that you want to put yourself out of your misery and that you're going to go fucking crazy. And Joe is like, I'm just going to.
And I love
you.
What they said about Stephen DeMarco. Someone was because they were like, why does he? I think they asked Megan Oppenheimer this. They were like, why does he give her the tape back?
Yeah.
And he was like, because it's not fun for him anymore. He sees that she doesn't care if it gets released. And now he's not going to hold that over her head anymore.
Right. Right.
It's not fun. So he's like, fine, take it because I'm not hurting you with it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It's
if you already hate yourself now. And they said, I think he's a little bit disgusted with how she's groveling.
Oh, I thought the same thing. I also was like, he's like the grossed look on his out face, by her. Like, he's like, okay, this isn't all right.
I liked that Diana stood up for Lucy.
I feel like Diana is going to come in and just blow this shit up and at the wedding.
I hope so. She's the only one that can.
She's the only one that can. So, and I think Stephen is genuinely scared of her. But I just think, I'm like,
Pippa, yeah. Hey, Pippa?
Pippa. I was a big Pippa stan until this last episode.
But I also, taking even what she did directly out of it, I just... she's even so self-involved. That. Like, she, the way
when he comes
that
and
she
breaks up with her and she's like, get the fuck out. Like, how dare you? I'm like, dude.
You're cheating on him.
You're also actively cheating on him.
She is more willing to get in a fight with Diana than admit that she could be wrong about Lucy being a victim and her relationship with Steven. She cannot hear Diana say, you don't get it.
Right.
You don't get what, what Lucy's been going through. And I think Diana even sees that what he's been doing to Lucy even is multiplied from what he was doing to her. Granted, we didn't see. But she, Diana,
she's too close to
agency.
It right now. She has to, like, she's like, I can't clean this up for you.
She was able to hold her dad over Steven. So it was like they were kind of playing a game of chess.
There was more power. When it's like,
whereas
Pippa
Steven's
realizes,
playing chess and Lucy's still looking for pieces to play checkers.
No, literally. She's like, I'm going to play sorry. When Pippa's like, you let Steven have those pictures of you, I was like, Pippa, shut the fuck up. Like, literally. Come on, dude. Like, I just couldn't. Okay, number three on the list was Mr. Big from Sex and the City.
I feel like putting him in the company with Steven and
I thought
Joe,
like, I was like, Mr. Big and then Joe and Steven, like, it just feels like a jump for me.
Especially when Adam Sackler's on the fucking list.
And Nate Jacobs. Okay, Nate Jacobs needs to be number three, not Mr. Big. And then
it should go Adam from Girls.
And then, well, yeah, I guess. Then Adam from
Caroline
Girls.
Has a soft spot for him.
I do. I do. Well, what about Fitz from Scandal?
Well, I never finished Scandal, so I don't know how toxic he is, other than that he's a cheater. It's a dirty, rotten
cheater. Other than that he's a president of the United States and he's a freaking cheater. How about that one?
Been there, done that.
And then number six being all of Rory's boyfriends on Gilmore Girls. Huh? Number six? We're having Mr. Big above all. Like, I think
all of Rory's...
They should be lower.
They should be down by Chuck.
I agree.
Chuck and did things
Ezra
that were
Fitz
worse than
is number
all of
eight.
Them.
Ezra Fitz should be up there. Ezra Fitz should be where Mr. Big is, perhaps.
Yeah.
Dan Humphrey's on, or Penn Badgley's on here twice. Dan Humphrey
Dan's
should also
there?
Be hot. Yes, because of Gossip Girl.
I think I skipped over that because I was like, I haven't seen any of these shows. I just got to the top of the list.
Yes. Dan Humphrey is, I think, like,
but
right
guess
before.
Because he's Gossip Girl, yeah.
Unless I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's on here. Because he's Gossip Girl and he should be on here 100%.
For sure.
Actually, he might not be on here, but he should be. Ezra Fitz should be much higher. He shouldn't be number eight. It goes 9, Adam Sackler from Girls, 8, Ezra Fitz, 7, Conrad Fisher. Conrad should be closer to where Chuck is. I'm sorry. And Rory's boyfriend
Conrad,
should be closer to where.
To be honest, I don't think Conrad and Rory's boyfriends really need to be on the list. They were teenagers.
I think we should
These
switch
are
them
all
out for Dan Humphrey. Get him on this list. Who else we put on the list?
Ren Kingston.
Oh, Ren. There. Bone.
Walter,
hey, freaking
Walter
gun.
White. Ever heard of him?
I'd say he is a boyfriend. Once to Skylar. he was at one time
and
a boyfriend.
Toxic.
Yeah, and he's toxic as all hell. Anyway, I do think the Stephen DeMarco placement makes sense, but Nate Jacobs being number four underneath Mr. Big.
Maybe I need to, like, brush up on Mr. Big. Did he kill someone and I forgot?
Well, I'll tell you, I just, last night, I was like, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to start watching Sex and the City from the beginning again. Because I've seen, like, a bunch of episodes, but
that's
not,
that's how,
like,
I feel. I haven't watched it all in one sitting.
It was always on E, so I would always be, like, watching it, but... I think I'm just going to start.
Caroline's a Samantha Charlotte hybrid, in case you're wondering. In college.
Thank you.
In college.
What?
She was a Carrie, for sure. She was a Carrie. And I think I was just talking to Mimi about this. I think Carrie wants so badly. She will never admit this. Carrie wants to be like Samantha. Like, she thinks Samantha is so cool and has her life together. But Samantha doesn't. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about the show. Is you, as the viewer...
Is that they're all like 32 at the at season one?
Well, that. But you also see the insecurities in each of them. But then you're also seeing the way they see each other. And so I think Carrie looks to Samantha in a way of like, oh, she's so cool and chic. And she can go sit at the bar. Like, you know what I mean? And we do yoga in the morning. And she can flirt with the yoga instructor. And like, she has this amazing life. But then you see it from Samantha's perspective and she's low-key miserable.
I just still can't get over the fact that you started this by saying Caroline's a Samantha Charlotte hybrid, in case you're wondering. But in college, she was a Carrie. Here's what I hate about Carrie. And no, no, real, no, Samantha is not as cool as Carrie thinks she is.
That's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. That's not what I meant.
That's not what I meant. No one will ever believe you.
The way you took it when I first said it is what I meant. I mean it in a good way.
Okay. Well, I do like the Samantha Charlotte hybrid. And they said that person doesn't exist, but she does. Oh, but she does.
But okay. I think they've all got a little bit of a Carrie in them.
If you're, 100%.
Hey, if you're a Samantha, if someone tells you you're a Samantha Charlotte hybrid, just know that there's you a little bit of Carrie in you.
If you have a podcast, just know you're a Carrie.
Even though I'm not a Carrie, don't say what I want to hear. Or don't say what I don't want to hear. Because I'll kill myself on air.
What, that you're a Mr. Big?
Guys, the truth of the matter is I'm not in this show. I don't even know these girls exist.
Phoebe's in Brooklyn. She is just not on the island.
I'm hanging out with my friend Vanessa.
Yes. You're a Vanessa. Just kidding. I would never say that to you. Okay, anyway. Let us know if you guys disagree. And if you have evidence to support Mr. Big being number three on this list, let us know about that too. I mean, because I could be missing something, but I don't think that top three should be Stephen DeMarco, Joe Goldberg.
It just feels like kind of,
if I had it my way,
kind of out of left field.
So the top three, and I don't know, the order could change on any given day, but it's giving Stephen DeMarco, Joe Goldberg, Nate Jacobs, or Ezra Fitz. Mm-hmm. Ezra Fitz just should be up higher. Sorry, he was writing this fucking book and he's a pedophile. Sorry.
If he wasn't an adult when he met Arya, he would be around Van Humphrey.
He'd be on the list, but yeah.
Because of the book and the gossip world, like, it would be kind of...
Yeah. All these people who hate Chuck Bass, and I'm like, but you're looking at this list and you can find arguments for all of these men. Chuck Bass doesn't even scratch the surface of what some of these guys are capable of, so... This was honestly a good win for us. And one thing I want to point out before we log off is Pod Crushed, Penn Badgley's podcast, is doing their final episode this week. Mm. And they've been teasing a Dare reunion. Yeah, that Leighton Meester is going to be on it. She was on their first ever episode and now was going to be on their last ever episode. I believe it comes out on Thursday. I will be staying up till midnight to watch it so that I can put our findings, the takeaways, the key points, and I'm going to put them online and then we'll talk about them, of course. But just so you guys know, check that out. I was really hoping that our Valentines would pop off a little bit more since I started them with the Dare one, but whatever. But I did kill it with the Valentines, so it's fine. Guys, thank you so much for listening. You're going to get an episode of The Caroline Show this week on Patreon Tier 1. Go check that out. Let us know what you want to hear from us on our Other People's Business pop culture episode on the Patreon this month. That'll be coming out as well. As always, if you want to listen to these episodes or our Thursday Gossip Girl recap episodes ad-free, you can go join the Patreon for $9 a month. Get all of our content that we've ever put on Patreon, all the content that we ever will put on Patreon, and these episodes ad-free. But as always, you know, listening to our ads does help us and support us, so please don't skip them. Leave us a review if you feel so inclined. I'm loving the Spotify comments. It's so nice to see you guys react to the episodes as you listen, so leave us a comment there.
Or for this one, only if it's positive.
Only if it's positive, thank you, or if it's information I have asked you to provide. And on Thursday, we are recapping season one, episode 10 of
Guys, please
Girl.
Don't call me pea-brained.
Phoebe, I'm just so not worried about it. Like, we have a podcast. Only smart people can have podcasts, and everybody knows that. No one's going to say that about us. Also, I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
I would love it. You know what, guys? Yeah, no, come on here. Come in the comments and call Phoebe a pea brain and just let me, and then we'll see how the rest of your week goes, because people can say whatever they want about me, but you say something about my fucking little sis.
Well, don't call Caroline pea brained either.
You can call me that and be wrong. They can call me that if they want. I can hold my own, because you know what? I honestly think that I gave a good enough like reasoning for how I feel about on this podcast. I think I gave a not pea brained explanation of my argument for
I feel that way too. I just, people are being so ruthless about this.
I have 2 degrees, so go fuck yourself. I don't care. I have 2 degrees in a podcast. Like, I mean, okay. I take your PhD and raise you 2 bachelor degrees and a podcast. Eat that. And they're in theater in English. Okay, guys. Love you so much. Thank you for listening. We love you. And we will see you on freaking Thursday. Enjoy the Tell Me Lies finale. Woo! And splat.